Welcome to The Reload, where we help unconventional leaders craft the life they truly want by questioning the assumptions they have about how life works. My name is Sean, and I'll be your host on this journey. As a performance coach and special operations combat veteran, I help high-performing executives kick ass in their careers while connecting with deeply powerful insights that fuel their lives. All right. How are you? Things on my end have been pretty good, for the most part. Had a lot of sunny days, been able to get out into nature a little bit. No prolonged backpacking trips or anything like that, but just getting out to enjoy some sunshine and some fresh air. And I found that is a very grounding experience. Now, it may not have the same sort of brilliant clarity or illumination that, I don't know, a psychedelic retreat might offer or a meditation retreat, but having the capacity to, on a regular basis, just sort of clear the decks can really be quite powerful in reminding ourselves that, yeah, maybe things don't need to be quite so pressured, and maybe the deadlines that we have really aren't quite as pressing as we like to believe. So for whatever my recommendations are worth, I encourage you to get yourself out there and just try to, as much as you can, get away from the sounds of vehicles and modern society and maybe get into more sounds of the wind, birds, leaves rustling, things like that. Now, today's topic is unlearning unforgiveness. And there's an experience that I had when I was in the military. It was actually my very last combat operation. And prior to going on that operation, my EOD partner, so not romantic partner, but my colleague, my teammate, and I were assigned to accompany a ground combat unit in Iraq. And they were going to try to capture a couple individuals who were, you know, I guess on some sort of list as far as being identified as insurgents. And the goal was to capture them to mitigate the threat that they were apparently presenting. And as sort of relevant backdrop to that story, the area that we were going to had a pretty hefty presence of improvised explosive devices, IEDs, that were planted along some of the patrol routes that these ground units were taking. You know, they'd been there for months and they had inherited a lot of these patrol routes from prior units. And there really had sort of become this kind of established way of entering into certain areas. And you might think, oh, well, that's dumb. That would make it really predictable. Yeah. I mean, touche. But also bear in mind that to some degree, the topography limits the number of ways that you can actually enter a certain area. So over time, you know, if you have a long enough presence, yeah, I mean, certain patterns develop and there's only so many ways of getting in, and yeah, the enemy ends up seeing that, and then they end up putting weapons in your way, because obviously their goal is to try to, you know, hurt or kill you. And so that was the situation that we found ourselves in before going on this operation. And that's fine, you know, I mean, it's not fine in sort of like the grand human scale, right? Like, obviously, I think war is a very terrible thing, and I've lived that experience. And I would say that most of the combatants that I've known don't consider war to be a good thing. They know the cost personally, either in terms of their own injuries and wounds that they've experienced, or in losing friends. And I would say losing loved ones, really. Because we so frequently become so close that when one of our teammates is killed, it is such a powerful blow to the survivors. So when I say not a big deal, I mean, I guess I mean that more from the sense of that was standard, that was habitual in the environment that we were in. Now, we started to argue with the officer in charge of that operation, starting to try to advocate for the fact that he should put us, the individuals who were, quote unquote, bomb techs, up front, along with a bomb dog. I mean, to us, that only made sense. You know, if you're going to be in an area where there are a lot of dismounted, improvised explosive devices on these little patrol routes, trails, basically, that you probably want to put the people who are most trained and most equipped to deal with those threats up front with your tactical point man. But for whatever reason, that didn't happen. And there's only so much that you're going to argue with a superior officer in the military. So we ended up in the middle of the patrol formation. It was a giant patrol formation. It was this huge operation. I mean, I think there were probably like 200 guys out there. And lo and behold, the point man ended up stepping on a pressure plate improvised explosive device. And that individual ended up dying of his wounds. And in the ensuing sort of chaos, the target that we were trying to go capture ended up waking up. I mean, surprise, surprise, when there's a giant explosion, it's pretty loud, especially in the middle of farm country in Iraq, which is at night very quiet. So having an explosion go off really does tend to announce your presence. And so the target, the individuals that we were there to capture, they ended up running into some palm grove. And then there was a bit of a rush to the rest of the operation because we were trying to go catch these people. And our original plan of sneaking in and getting into position and encircling them didn't work out so well. So now we're in this FUBAR situation, which if you don't know what FUBAR means, it's fucked up beyond all recognition, which is just I always chuckle when I hear that acronym. It's a very military thing to say. But we're in this scenario now where we're rushing, and then there was a gunfight, and another one of the Americans ended up getting shot, and I think also ended up dying of his wounds. And I remember thinking during that process, like, oh my God, you know, we lost one directly to an improvised explosive device. My purpose for being there is to disarm these things so that no one is hurt or killed by them. And then related to that is also this second death. And I kept thinking, God, you know, if only I had argued more persuasively, if only maybe if I had been more vehement in my protest, if I had found more convincing logic to convince the officer that was running that operation that, oh yeah, it makes sense to put explosive ordnance disposal technicians up front, because that's most likely where we're going to start to encounter IED threats. And I just went through this litany in my head. And I was really angry for years about that process that we experienced, about the ways in which it unfolded, thinking about the things that I could have done, that I should have done. And it got me thinking, you know, how is it that we begin to unlearn unforgiveness? And in some ways, this conversation is related to episode 106, Getting Lost in Future Thinking. But it more directly addresses the other side of that spectrum. Getting lost in past rumination. And if we look at high performers, so the folks that I generally coach, there is a very consistent theme of punishing oneself with unforgiveness. What are some of the common ingredients that we have? Well, we have very intelligent individuals who are highly educated, highly trained, highly experienced, and who have spent their entire lives from childhood striving and usually accomplishing being the best. And that is a perfect storm or a perfect recipe for this lack of forgiveness. Where is it that they do not allow themselves to detach from the guilt that they feel? The sense that they have done wrong, either by commission or by omission. In either case, it's the land of should. I should have. I should not have. And as I've said, you know, especially in episode 106, I'm all for after action review. But I think where we end up getting lost is that the intention of after action review is to learn. It's to understand better how we might improve the future and to incorporate what we have learned as learning, not as punishment. And some of you may be thinking, oh, well, but it's the punishment that makes this stand out. It's the punishment that makes me take this seriously. Ah, okay, you're throwing me a tricky one there. And I agree. Punishment does make things stand out. Oftentimes, and I've said it myself on the show, there are times when, after we have exhausted all other options, that sometimes yelling, whether it's at somebody that is in our family or somebody that is at work, sometimes yelling becomes the last resort. And sometimes, because the other person is so preoccupied with other things, or for whatever reason, they're just not in a position to get it any other way, then there are times when that, you know, sort of that slap on the snout, as it were, is really what gets through to the person and is really what allows them to see, oh, okay, yeah, you're serious. And the same thing is applied to oneself. I've definitely had instances in my life where it wasn't until some sort of punishing aspect presented itself that that item rose above the cacophony of all the other distracting shit I had going on in my life. To where I was like, aha, yes, I am going to pay attention to this. Now, the tricky piece is that punishment, if we are constantly associating punishment with action, we run the risk of training ourselves over the long run to act only when there is punishment. That we will not move until the whip catches our ass. And that puts us in a very reactive state. We're always in firefighting mode if we're in that way of being. Additionally, if we are that connected to or associated with punishment, then frequently what we end up having is a very deep connection, not only to guilt, as in we have done something wrong, but that then that can evolve or magnify into shame. If we have enough iterations of guilt, do we then potentially create an association inside of ourselves, a pattern recognition inside ourselves that says, oh, well, we must just be broken somehow. In which case, it can very easily go from I have done wrong, either by commission or omission, to I am wrong. Fundamentally, just as I am, who I am. And when we're trapped in that place of shame that's reinforced and supported by instances of guilt, then I would say that we actually end up stunting our capacity for growth. We end up not proactively incorporating lessons learned in a sense of, oh, I want to build a better tomorrow. Because we have effectively shifted our mindset, our awareness to the fact that, no, I don't so much care about building a better tomorrow. I just don't want to get punished today. And again, we find ourselves in a very reactive place. So when we look at what is it that can help us unlearn unforgiveness, the recipe is very similar to things I've said in the past. Understanding where it is that one picked up an unforgiving mindset. Was it something that we observed in our parents? Frequently, clients will have instances where a particular lesson was delivered to them overtly. In this family, we do things a certain way. You know, that kind of delivery. And it can be delivered either by mom, dad, uncles, aunts, grandparents. But this idea that it is explicitly called out. You know, the Johnsons, we're a thrifty family. And I don't actually know any Johnsons, but I'm just trying to prove the point here. But I think a subtler form of this, and in all reality, I think this makes up the lion's share of much of the conditioning that people undergo, is that they simply observe what it is that their parents were willing to do or unwilling to do. And then that kind of becomes the accepted norm. Because that is the environment in which you are growing up. So it's not that the parents had to say anything explicitly. It's where do we observe our parents having anxiety or anger? Is it over money issues? Is it over how much time one of the parents was spending at work? Is it over infidelity? I mean, there are a number of households out there where there is infidelity. And that when the infidelity is discovered, that one or both parents kind of, they just air the dirty laundry in front of children that are too young to really understand the complexities of adult human interaction. And I'm not trying to excuse infidelity. Now, personally, I don't really care if somebody is in an open relationship, polyamorous, or what have you. I don't care. What I do care about is where people are in alignment with their stated values. So if you have made a promise to somebody that they are the only one, then they should be the only one until you renegotiate that. And if it is that important to be polyamorous for one partner, even though that wasn't the original deal, then either the second partner is going to get on board with polyamory or open relationships, or it's going to go into ending the relationship. Either way, I mean, be in alignment with what you say you believe in. But the cost of potentially airing out infidelities and other stressors in front of children is that the adults frequently do not take the time to explain in ways that the child can understand why the stress is what it is. And where is it, and frequently adults don't even have the awareness themselves to fully understand where it is that the stress is coming from. Are they really worried about not having enough money? Or is it that there's some short-term goal that they're trying to accomplish, which is artificially increasing the stress or pressure about how much money is available? Just as one example. So we often have to look backwards to see what the rules were as we were growing up to be able to understand what is the framework in which we're operating. And then to be able to understand more deeply why it is that not achieving a certain goal, why it is that, you know, in the example that I gave about that combat operation in Iraq, why is it that I feel guilt about that point man being killed? Did I do the best I could to argue that we should be up front? I believe we did. I mean, it wasn't just me arguing for that or advocating for that. But there's always that what if factor. And that's the piece, I think, that really kind of starts to get in there and really stab us with guilt. So we don't know. Oh, God, we don't know. And it's that not knowing, that uncertainty. But what if? That's the piece that's really, really punishing. And this is the thing that I've had to wrestle with myself and have watched clients wrestle with, sometimes for years. We will never know. You're walking the path you're walking, as trite and pedantic as that may sound. And you will never be able to know what would happen or what would have happened had you walked a different path. And I've spent years torturing myself over all kinds of things that happened in my combat deployments. Turning it over and over and over and over and over, thinking, well, maybe if I'd done this or that, I should have. So lacing what if with all my very dependable shoulds. And it's a really toxic cocktail. And I don't have a foolproof, you know, five-step plan here to, or five-step process that I can sell you to make it all better. But I think one of the real sticking points is in getting to a place where, especially for high achievers who are accomplished and are used to being able to learn a system well enough or an environment well enough to ensure, at least they think they can, that they're going to get the results they want. And so one of the critical steps in understanding and really unlearning this unforgiveness is to acknowledge where it is that you are mortal and you are fallible. To be able to say, okay, yeah, I did the best I could with what I had. And as scary as it may be, I am a limited creature. I'm not omniscient. I'm not omnipotent. I'm not omnipresent. And acknowledging those fallibilities, those frailties, can be terrifying to acknowledge how weak we are in the grand scheme of things. But it can simultaneously be very empowering. And it allows us to put into perspective or into proportion what is actually ours to control or influence. I would say very little is ours to control. And a little bit more is ours to influence. But not by much. And if we can really truly get to a place of understanding the past in terms of the conditioning value that it placed on us, And then really begin to weave in where it is that we can acknowledge the scope of our control or the limitation of our control and the limitation of our influence. Then, to me, that opens up the window to giving ourselves grace and forgiveness when we don't achieve the results we think we want. That's it for today. I hope that you've been enjoying the show. And as usual, if you have, like, subscribe, follow, share. Share with those you like. Share with those you dislike. Or don't. Totally up to you. Until next time, take care of each other.